This is Sebastian Velasquez, and you're listening to Seriously Local.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Seriously Loco, the Seriously Crazy fan podcast for El Paso Locomotive FC. I am your host, Phil Bakke, and I'm joined by Christian Canales. Christian, how you doing?
Good. Kind of frustrated still from Saturday, but overall, things are going pretty well.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, a lot to talk about with the unfortunate 2-1 loss in Phoenix from Saturday night. Lots of talking points, and we will get to those in a little bit. But first, we kind of culminated a week of that's been really intense, really strange for El Pasoans and the city in general. But we culminated a week of El Paso showing just how generous they can be with a charity match played there out on the east side. Couple of El Paso youth teams and soccer organizations coming together and putting on a really cool event out there at the Socorro ISD Activity Center. So, I mean, you were there with me, Christian. We got the chance to be like on the field, and we talked to all the locomotive players that were there, talked to some of the participants as well. I mean, how cool was it seeing just how many people came out for that event as well?
It was so awesome. There was such a great crowd there. When the gates started opening, you and I kind of went up to see what the situation was like, and there were just people funneling in. It was really amazing to see the support from the community, the people that showed up, even though, they didn't have an obligation to. It was great to see all the participants in the game, who came from all over the country. We met someone that, came all the way from Connecticut. He grew up here and played soccer in the community, but he made that trip for this. Kind of seeing the history and pedigree of soccer in El Paso, kind of, all the legends of the game, if you will, that came from the area. And then, of course, seeing basically every player on the locomotive roster that came out too, though I'm sure, they had no obligation to. I'm sure it was a conscious choice for them to say, hey, we're part of this community. We want them to know, so we're here. So it was awesome to see all that.
Yeah, it was very impressive from what I thought. Just seeing those players out there and supporting the community, most of them have only, called El Paso home for the last few months, barring Omar and Chapa. So it was amazing to see the team rally behind this cause. And then also just the show of support from not only, El Paso at large, but Eighth Notch as well, making their presence known up in the second deck at the SAC. It was really cool to hear a Vamos chant started during the match, and then there was no shortage of quality either. I mean, a couple of older guys playing in the charity match, but some absolute class on display as well.
Yeah, there was offense, there was defense. We got a clip of that great free kick that ended up going in for a goal. I got my camera quality isn't as good as yours, but I got a little clip for myself of some super saves right at the beginning of the match. So. Yeah. It was, I kind of expected, we spent some time in the locker room and, if you see these guys walking on the sidewalk, you probably won't think much of them if you don't know who they are. But they got on the field and I was just very impressed, and you can just see, how soccer's just in their blood and they're going to be running around on that field whenever they get the opportunity.
And it was, if you haven't seen the goal yet, check the Twitter. Chava Mercado, who played professionally in Mexico and then played for El Paso Patriots in a couple of different stints in the 90s. Check out his free kick that we caught on camera just kind of by happenstance.
Sign him, Mark. Sign him. He's ready. He told me.
You can just bring him on and then try to win free kicks late in the game. But yeah, it's a perfect free kick. And so definitely check it out. Well, I'm trying to get that on SportsCenter just to raise the awareness too. I haven't seen official figures from the game, but I'm sure in terms of fundraising too, they probably broke, you know, a few thousand dollars. If I, you know, even if every attendee only gave a few bucks, you know, they're probably reaching well into the thousands of dollars raised in just such a cool event. We were very very humbled and privileged to be a part of the coverage of it and to be down on the field for it. So thanks to everyone involved, Mike Lopez in particular, who put it all together and put such a good event together in such a short amount of time. You know, basically 8 days from the, you know, incident itself to the fundraiser match. So really, really impressive, and it was great to see everybody come together for it. So the night before, we're playing Phoenix. We're headed into this match. We knew that Phoenix, obviously, going into it, riding a 12-game win streak, the longest ever in USL history, we knew it was going to be a tough match. And when Phoenix named a very strong lineup, given the struggles that we've had with injury, I mean, that was a little bit daunting in and of itself, seeing all of Phoenix's big names on the team sheet together.
Yeah, for sure. When we were doing the commentary, just the first thing I noticed is that front three, they're designed to, you know, score three or four goals a game.
Right.
They can all put it in the net. So that's intimidating. Like you said, given our roster and injury situation, you know, anytime you have such a solid team of basically, you know, it's kind of like going up against the Golden State Warriors, basketball analogy, you know, a team with, you know, three or four all-stars on the starting lineup. So it's hard to think of how to stay competitive in this game when, you know, we've been as depleted as we have been.
Yeah, we did, though, in this game get a little bit of reinforcement from where we've been recently. So Chiro and Toko coming back into the back line, Yuma starting in midfield. Those type of returns, we have been talking in previous weeks just about how noticeable it's been, you know, that Chiro's absence definitely felt along the back line. A guy like Yuma who can give you so much control and just a little bit of, aggressiveness in midfield, that we sometimes lack without him. Getting guys like that back, I mean, they showed in this game, I think, just how important they are when they're in the team, because this game was a lot different than the ones we've played recently in terms of control and comfort at the back.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, before these two come back, you know, we're a team that gave up three goals to San Antonio, which they've been on a pretty hot streak, so they're doing well, but you know, that wasn't who we would have been, you know, 2 months ago. That's not the team that we were. So to come back with those guys and to hold Phoenix to one goal from open play, I think just shows you how necessary they are to us and the way we play.
Yeah. Now, there was a big change in this lineup, and we laughed about it when it was announced, but Andrew Fox, Foxy, whatever you want to call him, he starts up top as a striker. And I mean, when I first saw it, obviously given the history of where he's played since he's joined Locomotive, I just assumed that it was a mistake.
just USL thing as far as the graphics go.
I saw the lineup first on FootMob or FootMob. I don't know how you pronounce it, but I saw it on the app, and I just figured it was something with how they input it or something like that. But Foxy gets a start as a nine. We talked about it as something to shake it up, but now having seen him play, I mean, is there something to that idea of Fox as a nine?
I mean, I think it was still, like you said, it's worth shaking it up, but it's not what we came to learn. It wasn't just a random roll of the dice. You know, we found out that he does have some history as a nine, you know, or an attacking winger. But I think it's one of those things where, you know, playing the position in college and then, you know, having to go up against these professionals who, these professional defenders who know how to defend against the position and defend against some of the best in the country at that position, it's a different story. So it definitely made me anxious, but also curious because, you know, nothing's been working so far, so why not? You know, you got to just keep trying things.
With, Fox's history, so I went and looked it up. He played collegiately in the States before he went back over to England, and then he had a brief spell in, I believe, Sweden as well. But when he was in college, he went to college at St. Edward's in Austin, and so he was playing at the D2 level, but he, in his time there, he, in 63 appearances, scored 36 goals.
That's not nothing.
So one and two, essentially, or a little bit better than one every two games. So that's a pretty decent return. And I will say that he didn't look lost up there. Like, he definitely knew how to play the position, and I think there is a certain level of physicality that he brought to it. That our other strikers don't really have. But it was still jarring to see that drastic of a change kind of made, especially before such a big game where you're kind of looking at, okay, what's our best 11? How do we get our best performance against what is a really great team? But in the end, the change kind of ended up working out, which I guess we can talk about when we get to the goal. But the game kicks off, and we were doing the live commentary, as we do on YouTube for away games. And the opening 20 minutes, we talk about it a lot. We often start really strong, and we kind of not fade from the game, but we start strong often. Normally we create some good early chances. This time around, Phoenix definitely out on the front foot to start the match and put us under pressure a few times in those opening 20 minutes.
Yeah, they came out aggressive 100%. It didn't look like they were afraid of our attack at all. They were pretty much at the box, at our box, you know, on every possession, yeah, just trying to snuff out our playing from the back. So it was definitely nerve-wracking. Another one of those games where the defense had to be on 100%. And they did okay, not great, but up until the goal, which I'm sure, you know, Phoenix's goal, which I'm sure we're going to talk about, I think it was almost a little bit of a bend but don't break kind of mentality.
Yeah, the press from Phoenix was definitely giving us some issues. I think we suffered maybe slightly because we weren't quite as sharp with our passing as we normally are. And overall in the game, I think we ended up completing about 81% of our passes, which is extremely low for where we're at. I think most of that's driven by the game condition of the second half. But in the end, right about 19th minute, 20th minute, Jose Aguinaga latches onto there's a tackle right on the edge of the box that goes in, and the ball just kind of falls to his feet. And as he collects, fires a first time, you know, a left-footed shot low and into the right-hand corner of the net. So, I mean, because we were in that bend but don't break, were we a little bit unlucky to concede that, where it kind of just fell to the right guy in the right place and he has a good finish? Or, I mean, was that deserved by Phoenix up to that point?
No, I mean, it was deserved. I'm not going to say, you know, that they shouldn't have had that goal because it was a good finish. But it wasn't the type of goal where, you know, they picked us apart or there was a breakdown in the defense. He came in with a really good tackle to stop, yeah, what might have been an even better shot on goal. And, you know, it just happened to not clear out the way we would have wanted it to. And Aguinaga was in the right spot at the right time. So, you know, all to him. But I don't think that takes away from the defensive performance.
Yeah, it was I think as well, given the fact that I think the fact we're about to talk about the referee for a while, I do have to say that he does miss a handball by Drew Becky in the box. I think it was maybe 12 minutes into the match. So that goal coming in almost kind of felt karmically correct as well, because it was, okay, we got away with one a little bit, and then they get a little bit of luck and score the opener. So it felt about right. And, I mean, from there, Phoenix taking the lead, there's almost an air of inevitability that follows. And we talked about it during live commentary, but, like, it felt like that was just, like, the worst possible thing to go behind in Phoenix. But the response from Lokomotiv was actually amazing.
Yeah, after the goal, we were definitely kind of just waiting for the other shoe to drop. But it was a great response and a quick response, which is even better. The quicker you can kind of erase that 1-0 deficit, I think it puts you in better shape. And I'm sure we'll talk about how that goal came about. But, just really great to stay in the game mentally. I'm sure it would have been easy at that point to say, oh, man, we're playing against Phoenix. We're in Phoenix. We're not the best team that we, Lokomotiv, could be at this moment. And now we're down 1-0, 20 minutes in. So it would have been really easy to check out. But credit to them for keeping their heads in it. And, the great goal.
Yeah.
For that comes about.
Yeah, it was, and it comes out of, there's a couple of attacks that Lokomotiv put together, some nice passing, a lot of good control in midfield. I remember not long before the goal, a really good just turn on the ball in midfield by Seth Velasquez. And we start to put Phoenix under a little bit of pressure, where it felt almost like the opposite of a Lokomotiv match normally does, where Phoenix obviously spent had most of the attacks, had most of the time being able to get forward. But every time we started to get forward in that moment after the goal, we felt the more dangerous, where they were kind of camped in our half, but we were breaking pretty effectively against their defense. Is there anything like particularly that we were doing differently that you noticed, or is it just a mentality switch that happened maybe after the goal is conceded, where the players kind of collectively are all just, we need to be sharper, we need to be better, and it kind of jogs them into a better place?
I think it had a lot to do with the fact that Phoenix was playing so aggressively at the beginning. It's hard to continue to do that for, a full half. So right about halfway through seems about the time where you might kind of start checking out mentally from the type of concentration you need to be that aggressive. And I think we just caught them at the right time. And like we say every week, we just have an affinity. We get opportunities like that every week.
Yeah.
We just don't always finish them. And I think luckily this week we were able to do so.
So it's the goal itself comes from a poor back pass, which is picked off by Seb Contreras on the edge of the box. He plays a pass, just a short pass across to Fox, who is able to lay the ball off to Edson Partida, who we know he's not shy of letting fly with that left foot, and he absolutely arrows that ball into the top left corner. Obviously, our reaction to the goal was pretty cathartic, but it felt like a big moment for the team because we haven't been scoring a lot of big goals. Even when Fox, if I remember correctly, when Fox scored against San Antonio, we were already down 2-0. So that was like getting us back in it rather than the catharsis of, okay, we've just equalized in Phoenix and we've looked really good ever since we conceded the goal. It felt like that could have been a turning point for the team. Is it, given what happened?
Yeah, I think so. Definitely at the moment, in your head, you're thinking like, maybe this changes the whole season, because like we had said, 1-0 down to Phoenix, we're thinking, man, well, maybe we can get out of here just 1-0 is kind of where as a fan, where our head goes. You know, yeah. Maybe it won't be a complete blowout.
Right.
But to turn it around and make it a game again after, you know, in the way that we did, you know, showing that we can fluster them, in my head, I'm thinking, well, you know, maybe this is the time. Maybe we're getting back to, you know, 9-game unbeaten streak Lokomotiv.
Right.
So, yeah, it definitely felt like that. We know a little bit better that maybe it wasn't necessarily that because of the result, but I think that, you know, scoring a goal after you haven't for a month, I think, is a big deal. I think it was good that it didn't come from Jerome. Right. You know, it came from one of these players that is one of those kind of spark plug players, not necessarily the marquee player, but he's in there because, like you said, he's not shy about, you know, releasing the ball. So
yeah.
I still think there's something to be gained from it.
So immediately following the goal, I think we kind of all collectively had this moment where obviously Phoenix the last couple of weeks have shown little bits of, you know, like holes in the armor, basically. Like Tulsa, they had a tough time beating Tulsa until Tulsa went down to 10 men. And it was a couple weeks, or their game last week, they went down 2-0 to LA Galaxy 2 and then had to come back and win 3-2. So that I think everybody knew that Phoenix was not invincible. But when, like, you know, like we talked about, when they get that first goal, it feels like such a mountain to climb. But when that goal goes in from Edson, I think we all kind of had that, you know, predator moment of if it bleeds, we can kill it. Like they're not unbeatable. They're not invincible. They have their own issues. They've been able to obviously cover for a lot of them by scoring just a boatload of goals. But after that goal goes in, Lokomotiv kind of get on top of the game and are actually seemingly the more threatening team, like seemed like the more likely to score as we went from, you know, the 25-minute mark to halftime. That 20-minute stretch was more or less Lokomotiv's like best period of the game.
Yeah, for sure. It was one of those periods where we just feel like everything's going right. Finally, you know, we're playing good quality soccer. They're not playing scared, which is great. And unfortunately, it just didn't finish like that.
So right before things start getting kind of out of hand, we have a weird incident in midfield where Lokomotiv are on the ball, they're attacking, and a pass is played out wide from the center of midfield, and it actually hits the referee, and Phoenix take it back the other way. James Kiffey commits a foul to stop the counterattack, and is booked. And it's basically, you know, it's his first foul of the game. He's also booked for it. Did that incident in particular, is that like the breaking point of where the referee just kind of lost control of the game, or was it the shoulder charge of Zach Lubin into Edson Partida?
Was that before or after? I
think it was either right before or right after. Like it was, they were in really close proximity to each other, I feel like.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I will say that I don't understand the card there. You know, up to that point, I thought the game was officiated really well. You know, it's kind of letting them play. You know, the players were doing a really good job of, you know, keeping things clean too.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Something happened, you know, in that, you know, 40 to 45th minute frame. And it just, yeah, the ref lost control of the game, I think. And unfortunately, we were on the wrong side of that.
So just before halftime, we were talking that, you know, going into halftime 1-1 is more or less, I mean, and having scored second, it feels like a, you know, like, I guess in a tennis match when it's, you know, love or whatever, but you get advantage. That it was tied, but it felt like we had a little bit of an advantage going into halftime. And then in stoppage time at the end of the first half, James Kivy's blocking Solomon Asante from receiving a ball that had been cleared up into the air. As he turns with the ball, his hand goes back, and Asante goes down clutching his face. James Kivy sent off. I mean, I think we all probably know how Locomotive fans feel about this, but the reaction, not only to send a player off, but to give the straight red as well, seemed like a series of odd decisions by the referee to escalate something that was very minor into essentially the point that changed the entire game.
Yeah, just nonsense is all I'll say about that. I'll say that it's nonsense, and you can understand. Like, you can understand what the ref thought he saw,
right?
Obviously, especially in real time. But I just, it's bad luck. Like I said, it's just bad luck. Cause like I said, in real time, like, what are you going to do? You know, I don't think as a referee, you're able to go and look at, you know, Asante and say, oh, well, are you bleed? Like, you can't, right. I don't think you can assess him physically before you make a decision. So, right. Obviously, we believe, and I, you know, after watching replay, we can see that the call was wrong, and it's just frustrating that these things happen to us. But also, like you said, the handball was missed too. The red card is a little bit harsher, I think. You know, I would rather have the ref call a foul and a penalty than have James sent off. But it is what it is, and you know, we keep playing.
Yeah, I feel like incidents like this happen a lot in soccer. You know, if you watch enough of the game, you'll see plenty of times where players go down holding their face, trying to make it seem like the opponent has, you know, hit them, punched them, elbowed them, whatever it is, because I mean they're trying to win. And Asante knows in that situation, if he gets James Kiffey sent off, they have a better chance of winning. So when watching it back, you know, the hand, it's not his elbow, which everyone was insisting that he elbowed him. He didn't. His hand flies back and hits Asante on the arm. And that's that's what's most frustrating about all of it is. And Asante has his hands on Kiffey's back. So it's a pretty natural move to go try to remove the hands when they're placed on you. That's just like that's every sport that is played. If someone has their hands on you, you probably move in a way to get them off. In this case, Asante goes down in a heap, clutching his face. The referee buys it hook, line, and sinker, and we're down to 10 right before halftime, right when it was looking like we had actually gained a foothold in the game and we're the better team in terms of being able to manage what Phoenix was throwing at us as well as create chances at the other end. So as a result, right before halftime, Derek Gebhard comes on for Seb Contreras to change the shape. Gebhard goes up top. Fox drops back to the left back position. And then we play a 4-4-1 with, you know, full up midfield, full up defense, and then Derek just chasing scraps up top. The second half starts, and for 20 minutes from, or 25 minutes from the start of the second half to the 70th minute, Phoenix obviously on top, obviously trying to create everything they can to get that goal, to get them a win, but Locomotive doing well to defend against Phoenix with just 10 men.
Yeah, for sure. They did well to defend, but also, like, they had some good buildup. You know, obviously, I won't even call it really an attack because I don't think there was ever really a threat. But you could see what they wanted to do and how close they were to doing it. And I was impressed by that. And like you said, for 25, almost 30 minutes to be able to do that against this team when they are at 1-1 and having a man advantage, they're obviously not just trying to end the game. You know, they're trying to go for blood. And so to be able to hold them and to almost make something out of it is very impressive.
The thing I found funny was in Phoenix's post-match comments, and I'll bring this up again, but Rick Shantz, the Phoenix manager, said the classic cliche line that is always used when you struggle against 10 men, and that is, it's harder to play against 10 men because they're not trying to attack. They're just defending in two banks of four. But in terms of chance creation, Phoenix wasn't doing that well against 11 or 10. So it's not like they went from creating a bunch of chances against 11 and then we went down to 10 and they weren't doing anything. It was kind of like that the whole game.
Yeah. When you look at the numbers, I think they had 5 shots on target, you know, out of 20 shots total. They were obviously trying, obviously, with 20 shots, and they weren't able to get the shots they were looking for. So I think that, like you said, that kind of speaks to your point that the whole game, there was really nothing that they could do.
I actually failed to mention in the first half Logan Ketterer's save from John Baquero's free kick. Haven't seen the nominees for Save of the Week yet. I saw Goal of the Week came out, but haven't seen the nominees for Save of the Week. It is a unbelievable save from Logan Ketterer to deny Baquero from that free kick.
Yeah, it was great, and I've kind of, you know, after we were able to speak to Logan this weekend, I'm going to just adopt his mentality about the whole thing and just be like, I don't know, who cares anymore? I don't think he cared ever. But for me, it's like, just who cares anymore? It's whatever. He's just going to go out there and do his thing every week and be awesome. And whether or not the league recognizes him for it, who gives a damn?
Yeah, exactly. He mentioned specifically in speaking to him that he had seen Baquero do that that exact routine on film. And so it was when they were setting up for that free kick, he figured, well, they scored from it last time, so they'll probably try it again. And so anticipation of what Baquero was going to do led to the save. And ultimately, like, I mean, goalkeepers may downplay it on, you know, in interviews or whatever, but homework matters when it comes to these type of goalkeeping situations. The save of the week is out, but I haven't seen the nominees. You're getting this in real time because I'm watching this for the first time. He's on there. So now y'all gotta get on USL Championship and vote. You gotta vote for Logan because they have actually put him on the list. So get out there and vote for Logan. He doesn't care if he wins, but I do. So
do it.
Yeah. So get out there and vote. The next, after all the hard work of 25 minutes of maintaining this 1-1 against the best offense maybe ever in USL, we have the second little bit of referee madness. Drew Becky and Adam John go up for a header. Becky's on Adam John's back a little bit. John collapses in a heap, penalty given. Your thoughts on the decision?
Soft for sure. That goes without saying. But again, it's one of those things where the decision doesn't confuse me.
Right.
The referee was in a spot where, you know, he was basically, John is covering all of Becky. You know, he's, right. He's a big guy, so you probably can't even see Becky behind John's silhouette. But you see Becky go up, you know, his arms get above the shoulder area or around the shoulder area, you know, the neck area of John.
Yeah.
And, you know, over the course of the last couple of weeks, unfortunately, I think Becky's kind of earned a reputation for, you know, being a little reactionary and aggressive, which I think, you know, the refs do their homework on that kind of stuff too. So unfortunately, as much as I'm sure they try not to be, there are these preconceived notions and judgments and biases against certain players that are subconscious, I'm sure. I'm not trying to say, you know, the ref had it in for us just because Becky's had a couple of fouls, right, you know, in the area. But, you know, it was 100% confident. I would rather see a call like that than, you know, looking at the video screen and, you know, 10 minutes later calling off a goal kind of call.
Yeah.
So I get it. It's soft. I don't like it.
Yeah. I mean, what I want to see is this will never be achieved because USL is such a sprawling league. Obviously all these ref crews are local, you know, more or less, like they're from around that area, and it's really the same maybe three ref crews that do every game that takes place at that stadium. Like, I think Locomotive have three center referees that all just rotate, basically. That leads to it's going to lead to a lack of consistency across the board because there is no, it's not a centralized, like, okay, you know, like leagues in Europe are, they have these, you know, whatever, 18 crews that cover every single game every week, and they get assessed, and, you know, guys get moved up, moved down based on their performances. Like, if they're not good, then they don't do a game again. You know, it's just like how it works. Here, because of the lack of consistency, I think we see this kind of foul, or, you know, quote unquote foul on Adam John, and we look across a whole body of a season of fouls on Omar and, like, our, you know, our big guy, basically, and the lack of respect that he gets in terms of his, like, physical play. He gets, it's like, hey, get up, you're big, you should be able to deal with this. So Adam John going down to a very tame challenge in the air like that, two guys going up for a header in the box. If he has any chance of scoring from that, guarantee you he's not on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if he has any chance of knotting that down for an assist, he's not going to go down that easy. But the fact that he felt that pressure on his back and he's just trying to nod the ball on and feels like, I can win my team a penalty, he goes down. It's probably smart from him. It's smart play in terms of it worked. But I would just like to see, you know, if that type of foul is going to be given, there have been plenty of situations like that in the box for us that are not given. And so that's that's where I want to see the consistency. And it just will never come because it's not how USL's refs are designed.
Yeah. And like you said, I guess, props to Adam John for, you know, making the heads up, you know, gamesmanship decision. But, you know, he wasn't founding member of our Shithouse 11 for no reason.
he earned he's earned his status like over again, pretty much.
Yeah, he's in the gold club now. Yeah. Like, he's like the next tier up.
Yeah, he's working on a platinum membership that gets him free entry to the Shithouse itself. but from the penalty, Solomon Asante takes it, and I mean, fair play. It's a really well taken penalty.
Yeah. Nothing else to say about it. Logan does what you can do as a goalie and just try and guess and guesses wrong. And unfortunately after that, you know, we're back to 1-0 again, except down a man.
Right. And, so there's this little flurry at the end from Locomotive once Phoenix, you know, kind of, they were trying to grab the third on the break just to try to, like, put everything at ease, but they were letting us have the ball a little bit more. They weren't pressing quite as high. And there is a little couple of moments at the end where a couple of possible fouls might have been called on the edge of the box after we had a corner and then we had a couple of passes on the edge of the area and nothing doing, and that was pretty much game.
Yeah, credit to the Locomotive, like, again, for, you know, still wanting to get the result there, you know, at least a tie. We had some really good chances. I was really impressed with Derek. I think it was a great game for him, you know, considering the circumstances and that he was playing. Everyone wanted to contribute at that point. You could tell, you know, saw Chiro make a run, you know, across midfield, which you'll probably never see again. So everyone was doing their part to try and, you know, get us back in and turn things around for us. But unfortunately, it just wasn't meant to be.
So the game ends 2-1. Phoenix gets their 13th straight victory and remains well on top of the West. Locomotive fell to 12th at the end of that, out of the playoff places for the first time since basically, I think, the second game of the season. So the team itself, though, and their performance in Phoenix, did they show you enough, this 11, did they show you enough for us to expect them to be able to get things back on track with the players we have available right now, and not having to wait for that, you know, magical day when Jerome Kiesewetter returns from injury?
It was a great game, but I don't think so. You know, we got the goal, which was good, but we had 3 shots on target the whole game.
Right.
You know, 5 shots total, but so, you know, we made the most of our chances, but we still weren't creating very much.
Right.
And Phoenix is a good defensive team, so it's not nothing, but I just personally am not convinced. I would still like to see some more.
Yeah, it is, it's tough to really look at it as well, because we essentially have one half.
Yeah, that's true
too. To analyze how the 11 played. And for them, I mean, they essentially registered all their shots on target in the first half, or all their shots in the first half, I think. So it's a bit of a strange one, because if we had we more or less matched Phoenix in terms of shots on target, which is crazy given the volume of shots they had, but a lot of them being, you know, from distance and not being high quality. We ended up with the same amount of shots on target, which kind of, that just kind of blew my mind that Logan really only, you know, he made the one save that he could have been expected to make. Mm-hmm. And Phoenix, I really thought Phoenix would create more in terms of, you know, genuine chances. So I think we know about this 11 what we knew at the beginning of the season, that our team is built, and like we've been talking about, it's extremely good at limiting other teams, and it struggles to create at the other end. And that's just kind of like the reality of Locomotive.
Yeah.
Minus Kiesewetter.
Right. Right. So the defense is there, you know, the defensive four are as good as we can expect them to be, you know, like, with the exception of Michak, obviously. You know, that's the best four that we have, and they're great.
Right.
They're great at what they do, and they do their job. And then when you bring it up to the midfield, you know, if you can have Richie and Yuma on the field at the same time too, that helps things on both ends, offensively and defensively. They're both really good at you know, moving the ball both ways. I would love to see Velasquez on the field with Jerome at the same time. I don't think we've seen that yet.
No.
So I would love to see, because I also think that what we haven't seen from Velasquez that we were expecting is a little bit of that aggressiveness and creativity. But I also think it's just because, you know, the players that we play on the wing, and, you know, having Omar as a striker or Derek as a striker is just not the same. It's not the same quality. Not that they're not great players, but, you know, Jerome, and Jerome is a better player.
Yeah.
And that's why when he's healthy, he starts.
Yeah.
So when you get the quality that the potential that Velasquez has with the quality that we know that Jerome has on the field, I think that, knock on wood, that's when things turn around for us.
Yeah. I think you could, it could become one of the most potent attacks if both of them are playing, you know, at their best. Mm-hmm. Then it could be, you know, one of the best partnerships around, because we've seen Seb Velasquez's skill on the ball. We've seen some of the passes that he's able to play. And we haven't seen him, I think, as far forward, because in some of these games we struggle to control the midfield. So Seb a lot of times is doing work, especially against New Mexico, and then in this game against Phoenix, Seb is doing a lot of like grafting in midfield rather than being freed up to play as that creative kind of free-flowing playmaker that we bought him to be. He's instead having to do like the hard work in midfield to just keep a hold of the game and keep a hold of the ball.
Yeah. And what I'm excited about, you know, if and when those two get on the field together at the same time, is I think it turns into one of those things where the defense has to kind of pick their poison. Cause I think that when Jerome does come back, I think that all eyes are on him at that point, which gives Velasquez more space to, you know, let the ball loose. Instead of having to dribble so much, he can start shooting some shots.
Right. Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah.
So in this one, obviously Adam John in the shithouse 11 already. Anybody from Phoenix make it into the 11, probably on the subs bench, but maybe not the biggest shithouse. But does anybody else from the team make it? From this week's performance?
Yeah, well, I think we had two candidates this week. I think, you know, Asante is obviously the first one that comes to mind, but yeah. Also Lubin, yeah. I would have to say, too. either one of those, if I have to pick one, I think we've only had one keeper so far, so I guess I'm going to say Lubin.
Yeah, I'll back you up on Lubin. I follow a lot of the Phoenix, like the podcasts and the team, obviously. And so I saw a lot of that video of Lubin collecting the ball and then stepping forward to check Edson Partida as he ran into the box. And it was being paraded around as a kind of goalkeeper, you know, this is like, don't mess with the keeper. And like, Lubin will lay you out if you come in the box, stuff like that. I just found it so strange, juxtaposed with the two major moments of the match that were far less violent than that moment. Yet Phoenix fans are pointing to those as clear red cards, clear penalties. And then we have a goalkeeper collect the ball, step out of his way to hit an onrush oncoming player. And that is something to be celebrated. I don't understand the logic. I think it's goalkeeper stuff gone wrong. I don't think he's entitled to do that. I think he's entitled to protect himself when, like, you know, if guys are coming into the box, especially going up for, you know, a cross or something like that. Goalkeeper 100% has the right to, he has as much a right to play the ball as anybody else. But if Edson was coming in, you know, studs up, or if it was a dangerous challenge or something like that, then Lubin, to me, has a, you know, he has more leeway in terms of being able to protect himself. In this case, Edson's just running towards him to make sure he claims the ball, because if he spills it, whatever, Edson could latch onto it. You know, it could be a goal. So the fact that he's running towards him, it shouldn't be taken as, this guy's trying to like come hurt me or something like that, which Lubin definitely did, and then goes out of his way to check Edson. So I thought that it was a dirty play because I thought that it was completely unnecessary. I think he sees him coming, he collects the ball, and then he stands back up. And at that point, like if Edson runs into him, it's a foul. There's nothing saying that Edson at that point has, you know, it's not, hitting a defenseless receiver or whatever. Like, this isn't the NFL. Like, you don't have to, you know, watch for guys coming across the middle. I thought it was out of line, and then I thought it was just really strange how much it was celebrated on social media by, like, Phoenix and their fans.
Yeah, what's weird about it to me is, like, the optics of it. Like, it's Edson. It's not like this is Omar. It's not like it was Foxy that was doing it. Like, it's like
the smallest guy.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't get it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Even if Edson had run into him, it'd still be like a fly running into a brick wall. Like,
right.
It's like nothing is going to happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't get it.
So anyways, Lubin's in to the shithouse 11 after all that. I think after New Mexico, well, we didn't talk after New Mexico for various reasons, but in this match, I think there's enough positives. Who was your man of the match for Locomotive in this one?
This might just be because I was happy to see him back, but I think Chiro did everything that we expected him to do. You know, I think he was pretty much error-free. So I'm going to go ahead and say Chiro. I don't, like we said, the offense did okay. I don't think anyone was particularly great. It was one of those things where everyone was about the same. So it's really hard. It was hard for me to pick out an individual.
Yeah, I think Chiro gets it by virtue of the defensive performance as a whole looking a grade, you know, or a half a grade better than it had without him. And that, to me, just demonstrates how important Chiro is as a leader and not just as a good defender. Because the whole defense just looks more put together and more organized when Chiro's back there. That could be coincidence. That could be just how he plays. But to me, that gets him that little bit extra in terms of man of the match, because he's been, you know, obviously one of the variables missing from recent performances. And I think we looked immediately better with him on the field.
Yeah, 100%. Against any other team, I would say it was maybe a coincidence.
Right.
But that it's against, you know, the best team in the league, I don't think so.
So it is a 2-1 loss to Phoenix for Locomotive, but we are playing Tacoma this coming Saturday, so a chance to bounce back. But first we will bounce into the listener questions. Just a few this week, comments and questions, but Fernie leading the charge. This is the week, guys. Loco's winning at the Swup. We'll talk about it obviously more when we get into the Tacoma preview, but I have to think that most will agree with you. Paul B915 said, not a referee question. Watching Phoenix, it seemed like we were back on our heels because of their speed, and I don't remember seeing anyone else this season do that to us. That being said, we kept our shape. Could we have done that without Chiro? I think we kind of spoke about it, but probably not.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree that we were back on our heels, except for maybe, like we said, the first 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
I think we kind of had to use the cliche, grow into the game. And kind of just get used to their tempo. Because to Paul's credit, I don't think a lot of teams do that to us.
Right.
Because they don't have, you know, that front three that Phoenix has. But I don't think that we were really back on our heels for very much of the game. But no, I don't think that would be possible without Chiro. I think this would be the game that we thought it was going to be had Chiro not been on the field.
So, leading us into our Tacoma preview, Patrick Areola said, Tacoma is flaming garbage, which we'll speak more.
That's not a question, Patrick.
Yeah. We'll speak more kind of in depth about what Tacoma is, because I don't know that Tacoma knows what Tacoma is. but he said, having said that, will Loco go into this match with too big a head because Defiance are so pants, or will they put Tacoma to the sword? Locomotive's not really in a position to be underestimating anyone
yeah.
right now. That's where I'm coming from.
Yeah, definitely. If I mean, I would hope that no one would ever say it out loud, but you know, if anyone on that team thinks that any game is a given, given the way that we've played over the last 2 months, then I don't want them on this team.
Yeah.
So I think that they're all professionals. I think that they all understand that they need to do better. So I don't think that that's the mindset that they're in. So I think that they're going out there feeling like this is a game that needs to be won 10-0.
Is playing Tacoma now, as we kind of head into the preview, is playing Tacoma now, does it feel like this is, you know, kind of the perfect streak buster, like the one that will end our dry spell of these last couple of months?
You would have to think so. Like, I can't remember specifics, but I'm pretty sure that they have had, you know, a surprising result or two over the last couple of games. But you just have to, you know, you just have to look at numbers sometimes and, you know, have to feel good about your chances against the bottom of the table team. So I think this is a good spot. I think that you're happy to see them on the schedule right now.
Yeah, it is. I think it does. It presents an amazing opportunity for Locomotive to kind of regain some confidence. The slippery slope of that being that because they are bottom of the table, any result aside from a win almost becomes devastating.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything except a win is points lost, you know, either 2 points lost or 3 points lost.
Yeah.
So it is a, as it has been for the last several weeks, it is a must win game.
Yeah. We've probably been overstating that, but this one really is.
For reals this time, guys. Yeah,
we are not the podcast that cried must win game. Tacoma, to their credit, Tacoma gave us a pretty tough game when we played them in Tacoma. Was that more of a factor of the amount of travel we had done around that time? Because I know we played Tacoma and Portland kind of within close succession, both away trips, and we came back to El Paso. The squad came back to El Paso before traveling back out to the Northwest. So do you think it was just where we played them that made that game kind of deceptively tough, or does Tacoma on their day have something about them?
I mean, I think that it would have, I think that travel maybe had something to do with it. But I think that, I don't think that Tacoma is a great team.
Right.
So I think that, maybe at that point of the season, we may have been underestimating them a little bit. So that might have led to it. But I think that we're kind of with our backs to the walls. Hopefully they have kind of that mentality of like a cornered animal, and, you know, we're just 100% out to attack. So I think that we just have to play smart and make sure that we don't give them any time to think that this is their game to win.
So since we played them last, they've played 7 games. Immediately after we beat them, they lost to Colorado Springs, another pretty bad team, 3-0. Then they drew in quick succession against Austin Bold, 1-1, and then 0-0 against RGV. Then the last 4 matches, they've had the most strange results up and down that you could possibly imagine. They lost 5-0 against Real Monarchs. Then they beat Las Vegas 4-1. Then they lost to OKC 2-0. And then they beat Orange County 2-1. So are they, I mean, I would have to do like a, I don't know, like an overlay to see which of those games overlapped with Seattle Sounders matches. I'm having to think that the wins may coincide with times when fringe players from the Sounders were available. Seattle plays in LA on Saturday, so likely Tacoma doesn't get the loan bomb before before they play us.
Yeah, we'll see. That was some good insight there. I hadn't even thought about. I forgot. even though on my phone schedule they still show up as, you know, Seattle Sounders too. I just didn't make the connection. So hopefully that is the circumstance. You know, hopefully the Sounders are a little their roster is a little bit shy for whatever reason, so they can't afford to send down those fringe players, because I think we'll need all the help we can get.
We certainly are going to be looking to increase the goals output, and this is the team that you'd like to do it against. They have conceded 53 goals in the 22 matches they've played. They've only kept two clean sheets, and they faced nearly double the amount of shots that Lokomotiv have faced this season. There is, in attack, they've only scored 20 goals in 22. They've only created 72 shots on target, which is a full 27 less than us.
Which isn't, you know, saying, like, which is actually saying a lot considering how few
right
that we've probably put on target.
That's games worth, you know, of shots for us. It's not like we're creating 27 shots on target in that's about five matches worth of output minimum. So this is a team that, I mean, should be ripe for the picking. As we look to Saturday, obviously it's kind of a cathartic moment for the city as well. It's this first match for Lokomotiv since last Saturday's shooting. So I know that Eighth Notch has some stuff planned, but do you think that this is also a nice moment for the city to kind of have something that is just fun? And just kind of taking people's minds off of all of the events that have been going on the last week.
Yeah, definitely. I think that any sort of diversion is a good thing. You know, obviously that's not to say that we should just forget about everything that happened, but I think it's good. I think the team was really hoping to pull out last week's win for the same purpose, but being back home after a really long time, I think it's been a solid month now since the previous home game was postponed. Recently got rescheduled. We should probably mention that too.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that it'll be good for a lot of reasons, and I think that it's going to be a very crowded game.
Yeah, I would certainly hope so. I think, and I think it is a good opportunity just for the team and everybody to kind of celebrate the city and hopefully with a big resounding win. Your predictions for this one with your goal scorers?
Yeah, I'm going to go totally optimistic. I'm going to say 2-0. Jerome's back, gets his brace.
Awesome. I'm hoping for, I heard news, about Jerome. From what I heard, it seemed like he's back in training this week, and actually fully training. They may not risk him this weekend, but they are potentially going to be, you know, fully match fit for the following game. So he might be on the bench. Not sure if they'll risk him, but he will have had a few days of training from what they told me, but they've also misled me before.
Remember when he was 50-50 2 weeks ago?
They have also misled me before. I'm gonna take your optimism. I'm gonna boost it up a little bit.
Okay.
I'm gonna go 3-0. I'm gonna go with I'm going to say I think Seb gets his first.
Which Seb?
Velasquez. Seb Velasquez gets his first for the club. I'm going to go maybe I'll go Seb double Contreras as well, and then I'll say that Derek Gebhardt, who's I think done enough to deserve to score in the last four games that he's played. I think Derek will finally get one. Maybe instead of just going wide of the post, it's in off the post. Yeah. He gets that little bit of luck.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not impossible. And it's like I was telling you in the middle of the night last night, I'm so nostalgic for, you know, the locomotive of, you know, April, May, and June. I was thinking just about these predictions that we were making in that time where it was almost so boring. Like, you just, like, the right answer was probably Jerome's getting a brace. Yeah. And it was so obvious that we had to just come up with these random things. We had to say, oh, Meshack's going to, you know, get a, you know, a volley that comes off the post on a free kick and just launch it in there. I miss those days. I want to get back to that so bad.
Yeah, it is. It's been a rough couple of months. But I guess the upside right now is that it can only get better, I think.
I've stopped saying that. I thought that was the case a month ago.
Yeah. But a really great opportunity for Locomotive to get back on track with this one if they can get past Tacoma, which I do think they have enough to do. And anything but a win against Tacoma will be an excruciating disappointment. But I think especially being back at home and being back with a very favorable crowd behind them, I think it'll be a nice boost for the players who have basically been playing on the road for the last 5 weeks. So, I think it's a really good opportunity for this team and a good opportunity for the city as well. The other bit of Locomotive news is that the match against Portland Timbers 2, which was canceled last Saturday, has been rescheduled, and it will now take place Tuesday, October 15th. It will now be the last home match of the season for Locomotive, and tickets for the canceled match, which was August 3rd, right?
Yeah, yes,
August 3rd. Tickets for that canceled match are valid for the 15th. So you don't have to go out and buy new tickets. If you've already got season tickets and everything, you just use your same ticket and it'll be valid for that match. So you don't have to worry about going out and grabbing seats for that one. So hopefully we can, even though it's a weekday, we can pack out the swap and make it a good occasion, a good send off for the team, hopefully heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, hopefully. What I was going to say is what I'm not crazy about is that's going to put us at three games in 9 days, right at the end of the season, which does not necessarily bode well at that point.
Right. Especially, I mean, God forbid if we're on the playoff bubble.
Yeah.
But even if we go on a run here at the end of the season and we're in a really good position in the playoffs, it could mean that we play that Tuesday and then immediately turn around and play a playoff game sometime that weekend. So, yeah, it scheduling-wise, it definitely is a lot more difficult than what was originally laid out. But I guess that's the sort of stuff that you can't really plan for. And then when you're trying to balance that with a baseball postseason as well, then I'm sure it gets a little bit difficult.
Yeah, I will say it'll never happen, but I liked the field. I know it was turf, but at the SAC, it was a very nice, I thought it was a very nice soccer environment.
Yeah.
So if needed, I would rather play a home game at the SAC than have to play an away game just because, you know, we didn't have the facilities or have to do something crazy like a neutral site game because of that kind of stuff. So,
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah, it was. It seemed like a decent surface, and the stadium's nice. I mean, mm-hmm. I gotta give credit to SISD for for ponying up for such a good facility. But yeah, that about does it for us this week. If you guys have enjoyed, we are a proud member of the Beautiful Game Network, which has a bunch of USL podcasts on it, including like the USL Show and some other ones. You can pretty much find any USL stuff you would like. So if you're looking for in-depth looks at other teams that we're going to play or looking ahead to other matchups, then you can definitely find what you're looking for on BGN. And then if you've enjoyed this, you can subscribe on any of your favorite podcast apps, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and a bunch more. If you're looking for us on social media, we're on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Seriously Loco, EPTX on any of those, and you will find us. So if you have questions or if you have comments during the match, after the match, we're normally either covering the match live from the swap, or we're covering the match via live YouTube commentary, which you can also subscribe on YouTube. I almost left that out. And you can see our supporter watch-alongs that we do. Really have a lot of fun doing that. And you can interact with us any of those ways, and we will talk about stuff you want to talk about on the show. So with that, until next time, hopefully post-win, stay loco.